Wishes, thoughts, accusations, and reproaches are swirling around in my head. I'm not really as conceited as many people think. I know my various faults and shortcomings better than anyone else, but there's one difference. I also know that I want to change, will change, and already have changed greatly. Why is it, I often ask myself, that everyone still thinks I'm so pushy and such a know-it-all? Am I really so arrogant? Am I the one who's so arrogant, or are they? It sounds crazy, I know, but I'm not going to cross out that last sentence because it's not as crazy as it seems. Mrs. Van Dan and Dussel, my two chief accusers, are known to be totally unintelligent and, not to put too fine a point on it, just plain stupid. Stupid people usually can't bear it when others do something better than they do. The best examples of this are those two dummies, Mrs. Van Dan and Dussel. Mrs. Van D thinks I'm stupid because I don't suffer so much from this ailment as she does. She thinks I'm pushy because she's even pushier. She thinks my dresses are too short because hers are even shorter, and she thinks I'm such a know-it-all because she talks twice as much as I do about topics she knows nothing about. The same goes for Dussel. But one of my favorite sayings is, where there's smoke, there's fire, and I readily admit I'm a know-it-all. What's so difficult about my personality is that I scold and curse myself much more than anyone else does. If Mother adds her advice, the pile of sermons becomes so thick that I despair of ever getting through them. Then I talk back and start contradicting everyone until the old familiar Anne refrain inevitably crops up again. No one understands me. This phrase is part of me, and as unlikely as it may seem, there's a kernel of truth in it. Sometimes I'm so deeply buried under self-reproaches that I long for a word of comfort to help me dig myself out again. If only I had someone who took my feelings seriously. Alas, I haven't yet found that person, so the search must go on. I know you're wondering about Peter, aren't you, Kit? It's true, Peter loves me, not as a girlfriend, but as a friend. His affection grows day by day, but some mysterious force is holding us back, and I don't know what it is. Sometimes I think my terrible longing for him was over-exaggerated. But that's not true, because if I'm unable to go to his room for a day or two, I long for him as desperately as I ever did. Peter is kind and good, and yet I can't deny that he's disappointed me in many ways. I especially don't care for his dislike of religion, his talk of food, and various things of that nature. Still, I'm firmly convinced that we'll stick to our agreement never to quarrel. Peter is peace-loving, tolerant, and extremely easygoing. He lets me say a lot of things to him that he'd never accept from his mother. He's making a determined effort to remove the blots from his copybook and keep his affairs in order. Yet why does he hide his innermost self and never allow me access? Of course, he's much more closed than I am, but I know from experience, even though I'm constantly being accused of knowing all there is to know in theory but not in practice, that in time, even the most uncommunicative types will long as much, or even more, for someone to confide in. Peter and I have both spent our contemplative years in the annex. We often discuss the future, the past, and the present, but as I've already told you, I miss the real thing, and yet I know it exists. Is it because I haven't been outdoors for so long that I've become so smitten with nature? I remember a time when a magnificent blue sky, chirping birds, moonlight, and budding blossoms wouldn't have captivated me. Things have changed since I came here. One night during the Pentecost holiday, for instance, when it was so hot, I struggled to keep my eyes open until 11:30 so I could get a good look at the moon, all on my own for once. Alas, my sacrifice was in vain, since there was too much glare and I couldn't risk opening a window. Another time, several months ago, I happened to be upstairs one night when the window was open. I didn't go back down until it had to be closed again. The dark, rainy evening, the wind, the racing clouds, had me spellbound. It was the first time in a year and a half that I'd seen the night face to face. After that evening, my longing to see it again was even greater than my fear of burglars, a dark rat-infested house, or police raids. I went downstairs all by myself and looked out the windows in the kitchen and private office. Many people think nature is beautiful, Many people sleep from time to time under the starry sky, and many people in hospitals and prisons long for the day when they'll be free to enjoy what nature has to offer. But few are as isolated and cut off as we are from the joys of nature, which can be shared by rich and poor alike. It's not just my imagination. Looking at the sky, the clouds, the moon, and the stars really does make me feel calm and hopeful. It's much better medicine than valerian or bromide. Nature makes me feel humble and ready to face every blow with courage. As luck would have it, I'm only able, except for a few rare occasions, to view nature through dusty curtains tacked over dirt-caked windows. It takes the pleasure out of looking. Nature is the one thing for which there is no substitute. One of the many questions that have often bothered me is why women have been, and still are, thought to be so inferior to men. It's easy to say it's unfair, but that's not enough for me. I'd really like to know the reason for this great injustice. Men presumably dominated women from the very beginning because of their greater physical strength. It's men who earn a living, beget children, and do as they please. Until recently, women silently went along with this, which was stupid, since the longer it's kept up, the more deeply entrenched it becomes. Fortunately, education, work, and progress have opened women's eyes. In many countries, they've been granted equal rights. Many people, mainly women, but also men, now realize how wrong it was to tolerate this state of affairs for so long. Modern women want the right to be completely independent. But that's not all. Women should be respected as well. Generally speaking, men are held in great esteem in all parts of the world. So why shouldn't women have their share? Soldiers and war heroes are honored and commemorated. Explorers are granted immortal fame. Martyrs are revered. But how many people look upon women, too, as soldiers? In the book, Men Against Death, I was greatly struck by the fact that in childbirth alone, women commonly suffer more pain, illness, and misery than any war hero ever does.